plague. Anyways, we welcome a fine guest, my co-devil, at least for the next half an hour. He is John Nichols from The Nation. John, welcome back to the show. Glad you said yes, sir.
I'm honored to be with you, my friend, as you grow and expand.
Yes, like a bunion. John, suddenly there's a new variant. I mean, I thought we could take Friday off and, you know, enjoy the long holiday weekend. And suddenly there's a new COVID-19 variant, Omicron. John, the president says, don't panic. I wasn't ready to panic, but, you know, I'm a little concerned, John. Is the variant going to wreck my Christmas?
Oh, that's a very good question. Well, it depends on what you're planning to do for Christmas. If you're planning to go to Europe or Africa, it could have an impact. If you're planning to stay relatively close to home, I think probably not. Here's what we know so far. The variant it's obviously real. It does apparently spread with relative ease, perhaps a little bit more contagious, if that's the proper term, than some of the previous variants. But it also appears to be very mild, that it doesn't have as big impacts on most people as other variants have had. And the interesting thing is there's a lot of debate now about whether the vaccines that we've got are effective in combating it or not. We don't know that. It's not certain, but there's concern, but not a closed deal there. So what we're going to do is learn a lot over the next few days and few weeks, and that'll teach us the key things. Number one, are our vaccines effective? If they are, then you're going to go on pretty much as normal. People who aren't vaccinated are going to have a problem. They always did. Number two, if the vaccines aren't effective, then, you know, how rapidly does it spread? How dangerous is it? Those things will all come into, you know, some sort of perspective. But my gut is that that we had an intense reaction to this one for a couple of reasons. Number one, because the reaction to the Delta variant was a little more casual than it probably should have been. So everybody's gotten more sophisticated in how they deal with the development of a new variant. And number two, it came over a holiday weekend when there wasn't a lot of other news. And I do think it sort of swept across all the news platforms, perhaps to a slightly greater extent than it might have at some other time. So that's where we stand. One final thing I'd say on it is the travel bans, as they've been implemented so far, are absurd. They're banning from certain countries in Africa, but the reality is that this variant has already left Africa. It's turned up in Scotland and Netherlands and, you know, other places all over the world. And you can pretty well bet that it's in the United States already. So some of the travel ban stuff is a little bit, it's an unsophisticated response. I mean, if you want to do a travel ban, you do a universal travel ban. You shut down from everywhere. You don't do, you know, like, oh, I'm not going to let anybody in from Botswana.
Well, John, how about vaccinations for all travelers, international or domestic? What would stop the FAA from making such a mandate?
Well, I mean, it probably has to come from above the FAA. That would be something that would almost undoubtedly go to the president and to the Biden administration. If they were to make that move, it would be, as you well know, highly controversial. Ted Cruz would blow a gasket. Now, do I think it's a good idea? Yeah, I don't think that we should mandate that people get vaccines. I don't think you go to somebody's house and force them to take a jab. I think the way that you make sure that people are safe in an era where you have the option of vaccination is to put restrictions on what you can do if you're not vaccinated. That's the model. That's the way to go for it. And I think saying that you cannot travel unless you're vaccinated is particularly by plane, that's a legitimate option to at least consider, and it would certainly be effective if indeed you said You can't enter the United States unless you're vaccinated. You can't, frankly, travel within the United States unless you're vaccinated. That would be one way to prevent the spread, or at least to limit the spread.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. That's John Nichols from The Nation. He's a friend of ours. Well, John, I believe in vaccine mandates. I believe that big business should require people. I believe that the airline should require people to be vaccinated when they travel. I think that's the least we could require of them. But John, the anti-vaxxer movement is kind of the new Trumpism. It's the new battleground. It's the new place where people put down their heels. And John, I cannot imagine that the vast majority of Republicans are going to do what those that are unvaccinated are supposed to do. They're the same ones that are resistant to masking. It's the same people. So it's the unvaccinated that I believe, John, through their contrarian natures, that will fail to wear masks, even though, you know, they're unvaccinated.
Yeah, look, the anti-vaxxer movement, and as regards COVID-19, as you well know, it's sort of a combination of some folks who are just scared. They're scared to get a shot. They're scared of science. They're scared of, you know, I mean, I don't know how these people cross the street. And then there's other people who are just political, you know, and they've decided that because this is something that Donald Trump was so resistant to and sent so many bad signals about, they will themselves be resistant to it. Even though Trump himself, of course, has a vaccination, I assume he's got a booster, and, you know, in fact, has suggested that his followers ought to get him. They don't hear that part of it because he sent so much messaging up to that point that was anti-vax, or at least that was skeptical or difficult on it. And of course, you've got people like Ron Johnson. And it's important to understand that compared to Trump, Ron Johnson's a really scary figure. Right. I mean, Trump's the responsible guy compared to Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson is running around full of just complete conspiracy theories, fantasies, bad theories based in, you know, I think what we generally associate with Ron Johnson, which is ignorance and certainty. He is the most competent, ignorant person I've ever met.
Well, there's a causation and a correlation. I mean, Ron Johnson is blissfully ignorant. He is Sergeant Schultz ignorant. He is doing this, to my opinion, John, and I think you might share some of this sentiment. Rojo's doing this because he thinks that's where the electorate's at. He thinks that he is appealing to the very Trumpist, the very, you know, anti-mask, anti-vax, anti-whatever, anti-science, anti-climate change. I mean, Ron's against it, and I think he thinks that's where the electorate's at. And John, I think every indication is the man's running for re-election, and he thinks this is his only path to victory.
Well, I think it's one of his paths. I you know, look, the fact of the matter is that while we don't have the level of vaccination that we should in Wisconsin, polling shows that people generally are pretty sympathetic to vaccinations. There isn't the level of opposition. So if Johnson's thinks he's going to run for re-election just as an anti-vaxxer or as a vaccine skeptic, that isn't going to get him very far in and of itself. I think I think Ron Johnson is a full nut package. Okay. He's really your bag of mixed nuts, because he's got his anti-vax theory, and that's there, and that's part of it. He's got the election was probably stolen, even though he can't identify any problems with it theory. He's got his state legislature should take over control of elections, even though Republicans in the legislature say we don't even know how we would do that. You know what I mean? You just sort of, you keep adding it on. There's one crazy thing after another. And I think that for Johnson, he is trying with far less, you know, competence to be, you know, the Donald Trump of this moment. Now, on the surface, that can look like a pretty stupid approach to politics. But the one thing to understand is that in our election cycles, when one party is in power, there is a tendency on the part of at least a portion of voters to go for the other party, right? To kind of whipsaw back and forth. And so midterm elections can often be good for the opposition party. And so to the extent that Johnson's identifying himself with opposition to everything associated with Biden, that still keeps him viable. At least I think you can't write him off. And I think that's something to understand. I agree with you that I believe he is running for re-election. I believe he's a desperate man. He loves the attention. He loves the quote-unquote prominence of being a senator and all that. So he'll throw anything he can at the wall to try and get reelected. I dare say if you showed him information that said that getting a vaccination and promoting vaccine mandates would get him reelected, he'd do that.
John Nichols from The Nation. He's a friend of ours. It's a Monday, you know, kind of winding our way back into it. And John, I couldn't believe there is a new variant, the Omicron, something of that effect.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to pronounce it yet. I got to worry about it.
I think you're pretty good.
Am I close, John? I'm kind of bad with
Delta was easier, I have to say.
Well, that was my fraternity in college, John. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates. My good friend, John Nichols, my co-devil for another segment.
I don't feel like my time here has been particularly successful.
He is an idiot.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. I got a fine co-devil for the half hour. He is John Nichols from The Nation, a friend of ours. John, so many topics. I am already concerned about the midterms next year, John, and I think the Democrats need to deliver more than the hard infrastructure bill. They need this human-centered infrastructure bill. John, what's the latest, man? Is it going through the Senate or what?
Well, they're back. You know, I mean, you should hope in your life that you can get to a position of privilege where you have the sense of urgency of a U.S. senator, right? Which is that, you know, oh my gosh, we've got all this stuff, the fate of the Democratic Party in the world is up for grabs. We've got, you know, all these challenges with COVID and, you know, 400 years of racial injustice that needs to be addressed, the climate crisis that is immediately and urgently hitting us, all this stuff that you should be doing. And they're like, oh, wow, they will take 10 days off for Thanksgiving. And now they're racing to get some things done because they want to take off like a month for Christmas and New Year's and stuff like that. So, if I'm betraying a little bit of disrespect for their I'm not, being too cruel. But they are indeed physically back in Washington, or they're coming back, and they're going to, have to sort out their response to the House bill. The House bill that passed $1.75 trillion with, you know, some additional money coming in through other directions. Now you've got the Senate having to deal with that. It's about half of what it should have been, the $3.5 trillion that was initially proposed. The House put some stuff back in, family and medical leave. Joe Manchin wants to take that out. He probably, I think it's fair to say, wants to also mess with some of the fossil fuel responses, the climate responses that are in the bill, and also some of the tax responses. That's also true to some extent of Kyrsten Sinema. So you're going to have some real wrestling. It's going to be a very nasty and difficult few weeks. Manchin's going to be, to some extent, in the driver's seat. But you are going to see progressives like Bernie Sanders saying, hold it. You know, we shouldn't be talking about cutting this thing. We actually should be talking about putting some things back in it, particularly vision and dental for Medicare and a couple of other things. So it'll be intense. My gut instinct is by the time we get close to Christmas, they will probably settle on some kind of proposal. It'll be largely driven by Manchin, which is too bad because his instincts are horrible. But the end result is that I think there's a pretty decent chance that they get a bill in the range of $1.5 to $1.75 trillion, maybe a little more, and to get that through the Senate. That's going to have to go back to the House. Ideally, if we're lucky, and it's not too messed up by Manchin, the House probably passes it and gets it to the president's desk before New Year's.
And then, John, we'll hear the cries of rampant inflation. How much of an issue do you think this is? I've certainly seen inflation at different varying places. I went to go get a Christmas tree with the kids this weekend. That has gone up quite a bit, at least 10% inflation there.
Yeah, I agree.
There are other places where we are seeing inflationary pressures. How do you think the Democrats should respond? Do you think a release of the strategic oil reserve is somehow a response that the American people can feel? Is Joe Biden doing enough?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, look, inflation's real, and inflation hits the poor and the working class hardest, right? And so a Democrat in power ought to be profoundly concerned about inflation. You should take it seriously. But there are many responses to it. I don't mind inflation and pay. I mean, I hope people's pay gets inflated and they make more money and, you know, have easier lives. I mind inflation and prices. Now, the problem is these things in a capitalist society tend to be linked, at least to some extent, not as much as some business folks claim. And so what you want to have is a very active, very aggressive federal government that is intervening in places where it can ease the pain of poor and working class folks who may be getting hit hard, so hard that it actually makes their lives difficult on not just transportation, but housing and food and a host of other issues. By the same token, you don't want to, you know, try and slow things down so much that that the increasing pay for working folks is stalled out. You want working folks to continue to be in a position where they can make demands on their employers for higher pay. That's what the UAW members in Iowa and other places did when they struck John Deere. They held out for a while. They were told, oh, your demands are unreasonable, et cetera, et cetera. But they basically got most of their demands met. And you want that sort of flexibility. So bottom line, you ask me how bad a situation is. It's a complex situation. And the right response to it is a complex response that again, errs on the side of the people that Democrats are supposed to protect, which is, you know, especially poor and working class and middle class folks with a little bit less regard for what happens to the billionaires.
Well, John, my concern is Democrats, they are not responsive to the vilification from the right. Of course, it's let's go Brandon and the worst inflation ever. And I wonder if the Dems could just simply control the narrative a little bit better, John. I mean, isn't this inflation in some way?
You know the answer.
Well, I do know the problem, which is Dems don't do a good job of controlling narratives. But is this perhaps, you know, just the result of a superheated economy, John?
Well, it's a result of a super complicated economy because we went through the coronavirus pandemic, the economic dislocation and dysfunction to some extent that extended from that pandemic. And now as we come out of it in fits and starts, you see a reshaping of the economy based on, you know, all sorts of new demands, some of them old demands returning. And result is that, we're in an unstable economic moment. And in such a moment where, most of our corporations aren't any good at planning, aren't any good at, you know, looking to the long term anyway. But when you've got an unstable situation, they're looking to make as much money as they can, as fast as they can. Right. That's the bottom line. And so you're seeing, you know, a lot of very short term decisions being made that does run inflation up. There's very little question of that. It does create a supercharged economy or in some cases an overheated economy. But again, I want to warn that the response has to be nuanced because you don't want to slow the economy down so much that poor and working class people who are finally getting in a position where they can bargain for jobs, bargain for pay, are suddenly told, oh, no, you know, you're the problem. You can't ask
John,
for better pay.
I got to slow you down right now. We're out of time. My friend John Nichols, thank you so much. More Devils. We'll be right back.
Our economy's on fire.
Well, he always did have an inflated opinion of himself.